This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, my name is Roland Clark, and I'm here today on the New Books Network talking to Andrea Kaltenbrunner, who's a research fellow at the University of Vienna, where she's studying the National Christian Defense League in interwar Romania as an example of a multi-ethnic anti-Semitic movement. So that's her next project, but the book we're talking about today is based on her PhD dissertation at the University of Vienna, and it can roughly be translated as For the Faith Against the State, Old Calendarism in Romania, 1924 to 1936. Old Calendarism was a religious movement that appeared in northeastern Romania during the early 1920s and was based on rejecting the decision of the Romanian Orthodox Church to challenge the liturgical calendar in 1924. Andrea, many of our listeners have probably heard about Old Believers in Russia, but not about Old Calendarists in Romania. Can you tell us what's the difference?
So the term Old Believers refers to Orthodox Christians who rejected several reforms that Patriarch Nikon implemented in the 16th century in the Russian Empire. Whereas Old Calendarists, these are a totally different group of Orthodox believers. Old Calendarists rejected the liturgical calendar that Orthodox churches introduced in 1924. So after First World War, many Orthodox churches decided that it was time to change their calendar because it was the Julian calendar, which was back with 30 days to the Gregorian calendar. So they decided this in 1924. What Orthodox believers thought is, okay, now the Orthodox Church is coming with a new calendar, which is similar to the Catholic one. So we don't want to become Catholic. So what does this measure now means? So yeah, Orthodox, Old Calendarists rejected this calendar reform, 1924.
So they really are completely different movements.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. If changing the calendar caused so much trouble, because you spend several hundred pages in your book going through all the trouble that it caused, why do you think the Romanian Orthodox Church and the state were so insistent on changing it?
Yes. This question is related to the Orthodox Church in 1918, after First World War. It was one of the largest Orthodox churches in the world. It had almost over 50 million members, so it was a really huge institution. But when we look closely, it was really divided because it was made up of really different Orthodox churches. After 1918, it belonged or the Orthodox Church from Bessarabia, former province of the Russian Empire. It had now Orthodox churches, Orthodox Church from Bukovina, Transylvania, or parts of the Habsburg Empire. So the new Romanian Orthodox Church really needed some measures to unify all these institutions. And although it was just a symbolic measure, it was really a crucial one, a defining one, especially in the eastern part in Bessarabia, which was, as I mentioned, part of the Russian Empire, because it was also a sign to say, okay, this part does no longer belong to the Russian Orthodox Church, but it was now part of Romania. The Russian Orthodox Church continued to use the old calendar. So yes, it was a unifying measure and defying measure, to say. Yeah.
It's ironic that when you try to unify, you actually divide. old calendarism was really strong in parts of Bessarabia and parts of Moldavia. But in this book, you focus on Bessarabian old calendarism in particular. What was it about interwar Bessarabia that makes it such an interesting case study on peasant religion and nation building?
At the beginning, the Romanian Orthodox Church argued, okay, we need this calendar reform in order to modernize, in order to be at the same level with the state, because the administration was using already the new calendar, to say. And while in Moldova and in other parts it was just a modernization measure, in Bessarabia it was also a nationalizing measure. It was like for national homogenization. So when Orthodox believers there started to question the reform, the central government said, okay, so you are rejecting our measure, so you are against us. It immediately gained a national component. Yes, it was no longer just by rejecting the reform, Orthodox believer there were not just rejecting the state, but the nation as a whole. At least this is what the central authorities understood, and this is how they proceeded against all calendarists.
So it was kind of like we don't actually want to be part of Greater Romania.
Oh, it developed to this belief, yes. Yes.
So you told us that people in Bessarabia weren't that happy with being part of this new Romanian nation state, and with the way that the Romanian Orthodox Church had sort of heavy-handedly brought them under its control. What did the church try to do to convince them to stay? Like, did they give out lollies or...?
For me, I paid a lot of attention to this aspect because it was interesting. Now the church has 2.5 million new members from Bessarabia. How do you communicate to them your new reforms, your new measures, your new beliefs, your new national program? Even though the majority of the Orthodox believers in Bessarabia spoke Romanian and, they were Orthodox, it was surprising to notice that the Romanian Orthodox Church did little to implement this reform to explain what the new calendar was. I found some short books and brochures, and that's it. So not very much. And put pressure on the local priest, on the village priest, to explain to the believers what Romania was about, this calendar was about. And even when the priest said, okay, this is not enough, we need more help, send us some people, send us more help, because we alone, we are not able to explain such a reform. And people were from the beginning so much against it that, yeah. So the Orthodox Church, I think they was so convinced about their reforms and didn't do anything to communicate it properly.
Did the church stay unified in its argument or in its campaign, or did they start fighting amongst themselves?
Oh, no, this is a long question. So at the beginning, it was just it's presented as a modernization measure, as a measure to help the state. This was the message at the beginning. As the conflict was worsening, they said, okay, no, it's nothing, it has nothing to do with the state, this has nothing to do with the Catholic Church, it's not a Catholic calendar, this is our calendar, this is the best calendar in the world, yes. So this was also difficult to explain, because at the beginning they said something, and then they came with another version. And then, of course, there were priests in Bessarabia, high-ranking priests who said, okay, we have to give up because there's too much protest. The Orthodox believers, our members will never accept this reform. So it was difficult. There were regional protests. Yeah.
Why were people calling it a Catholic calendar?
Because at the beginning it was somehow presented like this. Because the Catholic Church was the first who changed the Julian calendar in the 16th century. So, they noticed that they were celebrating on the same time with the Catholic believers. Something that was not usual for them. So they said, okay, we are getting closer to the Catholics.
So it kind of feels like selling out to the West.
Yes, definitely.
Every social and religious movement needs leaders. What sorts of people were most involved in helping organize cult calendarism and spreading the message?
I should say, mention that I used mostly state and church produced sources, documents. And they presented somehow a distorted version. They say, okay, the simple peasants they cannot organize this kind of protest. Somebody, our enemies, our national enemies, are acting now against us. They looked intensively for scapegoats, and they found it pretty easy. They were the communists, and they were all kinds of Russians who the state thought that were behind this movement. But when we look closely, we noticed that these were just the leading old calendarists were the just normal people, normal peasants, because it was a rural movement. For them, it was like a natural reaction to oppose the reform. So when the state, a new state comes and wants to implement a reform, they said, okay, no, this is just against our beliefs, against our everything, and it was just easy for them to oppose the reform. In Moldova, I noticed that leading all calendarists were from monks and nuns from the monasteries, but this was regional, specific regional for this region.
You just mentioned nuns. Were many women involved as leaders, or are they mostly followers in this movement?
I would say mostly followers, but yeah, what I could identify is women organized, or the lowest level, or the village level, they gathered money, signatures, but they were never like priests, or they didn't fulfill religious ceremonies or so on, but they helped organizing the community on a village level.
And this is the problem we're trying to study, village level politics, is the state doesn't know what's going on. And so it's hard for historians to find out because we're relying on state documents.
Oh, it's really difficult, yes.
So as you said, there seemed to be a lot of monks involved. What was happening to monasticism at this time that might have made monks particularly belligerent or ready to fight back against the state and the church?
I think after First World War, they started to feel better, or how to say, the state was more present in their daily lives, to say, because authorities looked closely if the monasteries accepted the reform. So they felt the pressure from the state to adapt to these reforms. This was one, state presence, I would say. And second, there was an agrarian reform after First World War, and this agrarian reform largely affected the churches because they too had to give their land to the state. So there was a financial dissatisfaction towards the state from the monks, and also, yeah, they felt that their authority was they were forced to give up their authority to the state. And then, as I mentioned, the state looked closely if the monks accepted the reform. If this was not the case towards the end of the 1920s, they were then forced to leave the monasteries. So, yeah, overnight they were without shelter, without food and money, and they looked, okay, so they said, okay, we need a new job, and all calendarist peasants were more than happy to accept them among them and to provide for them. And in exchange, these monks played the role of village priests or old calendarist priests. So it was definitely a mistake from the part of the state to say to all these monks, okay, just leave the monastery if you do not agree with the calendar reform. Because it brought the monks and the peasants closer together.
Yeah, take away their money and their authority and then their houses, and you get surprised when they're upset. Old calendarism is unlike almost any of the other religious movements in 20th century Romania, because it gets violent. And this is one of the most interesting chapters in your book, I thought, because they fight back several times in the 1920s and 30s with these pitched battles. What happens to make old calendarists fight back?
Yes. So again, state presence, it increased. The state presence increased, and responsible for this was the gendarmerie, rural security force in Bessarabia. And the gendarmerie was allowed and ordered to follow the old calendarists, to look after them, to see what they are doing. So, yes, when old calendarists noticed this control and punishment, because the gendarmes punished also old calendarists, they just protest and oppose. And there are some cases, as you mentioned, where this gets really violent. And in the historiography, these conflicts are known as rebellions from the old calendarists. Yes.
In a lot of the sources about police and gendarme persecution of neo-Protestants, like Baptists and Pentecostals, it seems like the gendarmes actively wanted, like the individuals wanted to persecute these groups because they were angry with them. Do you get the sense that the gendarmes really were upset and hostile themselves towards old calendarism, or was it they were just doing their jobs?
Oh, totally. They were upset. They were actually not understanding what was going on. And this has a lot to do with the institution of gendarmerie. Yes, it was, at least in Bessarabia, it was a really new institution made up at the beginning mostly of soldiers, but then of gendarmes sent from other parts of Romania When they arrived in Bessarabia and saw the chaos, it was not chaos, yes, but it was, they saw different religious groups, different languages. I think they understood little what was going on there, and they just perceived everything that was different to their Orthodox belief and to their Romanian language as hostile. So when they saw peasants that they were not following the calendar, they have different days to celebrate, it was just unimaginable for them. So, yeah. Many gendarmes acted out of their nationalistic beliefs, yes. Because at some point, the interior minister tried to talk with the gendarmerie and to say, okay, just pay attention how you follow the old calendars. Don't be so so intrusive, so even so violent. And to the gendarmerie was like, no, you have no idea what they are doing there. So they kept following old calendars.
And the police and the gendarmes, they blame the church for the trouble. They say, well, these are your people. They're rebelling against you. You should fix it. And the church said, no, actually, these people are upset with the Romanian state and you're provoking them. It's a police problem. Who was right, do you think? Was this conflict about the church or was it about the state?
So gendarmerie and the gendarmerie and the police was definitely right when they say when they were saying that this is a church problem. Because the church was at the beginning responsible for implementing the reform, for explaining the reform to its members, yes. But then the church noticed that the situation was out of control and asked for state help, yes, and at the end of the 1920s. And the central authorities said, okay, we will provide this help. So they started to work together, security forces and church, the church, on implementing the reform, meaning on forcing the Orthodox believer to accept the reform. So at the end, it was a state and a church problem. But it was like always like a game when the church felt that it was doing good and it was had everything under control, said, okay, we don't no longer need a state. But it was difficult, yes. It was such a sensitive reform, and for police forces and church to work together, it was a bad combination from the perspective of the Orthodox believers. Because old calendaries said thought, if the church want to talk with us, then yes, its representatives from Bucharest, from Chisinau should come to us and talk with us, but not send gendarmes and police to do this.
It's almost like a hot potato that no one really wants to touch, but everyone wants something to fix. It wants it fixed.
Yes, exactly.
So your current project, you're working on an anti-Semitic political party called the National Christian Defense League. And I was really surprised to see in your old calendarist book that the Defense League was involved in old calendarism. Can you tell us what the relationship between an anti-Semitic political movement and a movement about religious reform, how do they get together?
I came across this aspect by researching something else. I was interested in connections between communists and old calendarists. I know it sounds absurd, but this is what at the beginning of my research I read. Okay, old calendarists were so repulsive, were so much against the Romanian state because these were communists, these were supported by communist organization from Soviet Russia. So I started looking at political connections between local communist organizations and odd calendarists now in Bessarabia. But reading, searching, I discovered something else, that Lang, this anti-Semitic party, was very much looking into gaining odd calendarists on their side. And then I went in Bucharest and noticed, okay, but officially Lang was not so open for old calendarists. And then I said, okay, it was just regionally specific, that regional organization of this anti-Semitic party. Okay, said, okay, if you are against calendar, we can accept that. We will help you to receive back the old calendar. And they spoke a similar language. All calendarists look for political support, and they were more than happy when Lang came and provided for them. And the fact that the party was so anti-Semitic was not at all a problem for them.
So the old calendarists, they need some sort of political support, because they don't have the money and they don't have the organizational structures to be able to spread their message.
Exactly, yeah.
And they don't like Jews either, so they don't really care that Lunk is anti-Semitic. But what's in it for Lunk?
Votes, political support, but mostly votes, yes.
So they needed the support in a region when they weren't necessarily strong to start with.
Exactly, yes.
In the last chapter of the book, you examine a sociological study of old calendarism, which is written in 1931, and you talk about 20 sociologists were sent out from Bucharest to study old calendarism in the village of Cornova. What did they find? What were some of the things that you found most interesting about what the sociologists, when they got to this village, discovered?
Yes. It was interesting to see that they found Orthodox believers who used both calendars. They said, okay, we celebrate according to the new calendar, but also according to the old calendar. This was for me interesting, because I thought, you are either on one side or on the other side. It was interesting to see that the sociologists didn't notice how big of a deal this issue was. They underestimated the dissatisfaction. They went only in Cornova. It was not a center of the old calendarist movement. And it was also interesting to see that all calendarists can reject, can be against the calendar reform, but can do it peacefully and quietly, without violence, without organizing. In Cornova, there was no separate all calendarist praying house or church like in other villages. So yeah, it was like more of a passive form of protest. Yes.
And therefore, it's probably more safe for the sociologists to turn up.
Oh, yeah, I think so. Yes.
What did they find out about demographics? Like, were most old calendarists old women or young men? Or
yes, the study says the majority were old people. And I'm not sure about this, because this was the belief, widespread belief of the church and even of the beginning of the authorities, that, okay, it's not a problem. This protest, this is just from all the people who are not used to reforms, to the idea of modernization, yes, of modernizing. So this is what the study also shows. But yes, when I look closely and in villages where the old calendar is set a strong organization. So there I noticed, okay, old, young people organize. Everything is, everyone is organizing together against the reform. Yeah.
Did you find any Russian communists? You said before that you went looking for them because that's what the police said were there.
No, not yet. No. No, really not. Because I found local organizations, communist organizations, but they said, okay, no, this is just too much for us. The religion, no. They could not understand this kind of protest and. The meaning of the calendar, it was, they focused on other aspects.
Were there any Russians even?
Oh, yeah. Yes. And in Chisinau, there was a group of Russian Orthodox. This is... It's a little bit hard to explain. These were Orthodox believers, part of the Orthodox Church in Bessarabia, who after 1918 rejected the unification of the Orthodox Church in Bessarabia with the Romanian Orthodox Church and said, okay, we are part, we belong to the Russian Orthodox Church and we will always be part of the Russian Orthodoxy. And they kept Russian as a liturgical language, and they also kept the odd calendar. And they tried to organize their own separate church, which was against the law in Romania by that time. The state allowed only one Orthodox church to exist, and this was the Romanian Orthodox Church. So it was not allowed to have a separate church. Nevertheless, they continued to organize under the pressure of the police and so on. And during the 1930s, they became aware that there were peasants in northern Bessarabia who were very much against the calendar reform, and they tried to approach them and to say, so yes, we use the old calendar, but yes, we have also Russian as liturgical language. And they said, there's no problem, we need a priest and you are welcome here. So yes, but these were not intensive contacts. And this happened, as I said, in the 1930s when the state control was also increasing. So they didn't have too much time to organize together. And yes.
So old calendarism doesn't come out of the Russians, but they do find common purpose and they're willing to work together near the end.
Exactly.
So Chisinau is quite a big city, but most old calendarism happens in small villages. Were there old calendarists in the cities as well?
Yes. The city, not in the center, but at the periphery of Chisinau, I read reports that there were Romanian Orthodox Christians who were against the reform, and they joined this Russian church. Yes.
It's very interesting. It's an amazing movement and a really interesting part of the world. So thanks for talking us through that really fascinating subject.
Thank you.
And the book's there for anyone that wants to read it. It's in German, so hopefully you can read German to get it. But even for those that don't read German, Andrea has just unpacked some of the core themes of it for us today. So thank you very much, Andrea.
Thank you so much for having me.